You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to Glad Tidings, the Athletic's Everton Football Club podcast. Well, it's me, Greg O'Keefe, but instead of being joined by Paddy Boylan, who's on holiday, enjoying a nice and break, I'm joined by a more than adequate sub. It's Michael Ball, former Everton, Manchester City, Rangers, Leicester, you name it, he's probably played for them, left back, but mainly Everton, let's be honest. And what a good time to get him on. We've got some left back topics to discuss. We've got a brilliant start to the season. We've got a fantastic new playmaker. And then we'll ask him about his thoughts on the things that didn't work quite so well at St Mary's on Sunday. First thing, Bawley, how are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm very good, thank you. How are we all?
Not bad. I'm a little bit more lively from the message I sent you before we started recording.
It did wake me up, to be fair. Panicked a little bit thinking I didn't know what to do.
On to the Blues. It really has been such a spectacular contrast from... I read your stuff in the Echo towards the end of last season, and obviously we have the occasional chat, and it was just utterly depressing, wasn't it? And then to go away, do the business we did, and start though we have, the contrast has just been huge, hasn't it?
It's been great. You know, we brought Carlo Ancelotti in, and we were expecting a bit of a reaction, which we sort of did for a short moment, and then we sort of went back into our old ways, and you know, many of us. Fans are talking together, thinking, you know, what do we need? People say we need strikers. We haven't replaced Lukaku. We need centre-halves. And probably midfield wasn't the one that we thought was maybe one player, maybe in midfield. We just had other priorities. But Carlo, you know, he brought him to the club and he said to the board, look, I need to bring these three guys in. And, you know, Rodriguez we'll probably talk about later. You know, he wouldn't be wearing the blue shirt if it wasn't for Carlo. So that was the strength of bringing Carlo in and the attraction he has. But the impact and the change of how we play football is totally changed by them three guys. I think Alan has been fantastic. He looks like he's going to do all the dirty work and get us on the front foot. And Decore's got the legs, but it's raised the bar for the other players around him. I thought, you know, I think Richarlison's been absolutely fantastic this season. You know, no strikers are, you know, they're very selfish and they want to get on the score sheet, but his work rate, you know, he's always worked hard for the shirt, he's always worked hard for his teammates, but I think even his level's gone up on work rate because you know, the limelight's probably gone to the other side of the pitch where the media are focusing on and everyone else is talking about, and they've forgotten about Richarlison's there with a bit of grit between his teeth to prove people like I'm still here, you know, I've still got the quality, and it happens, you know, with, you know, many footballers will say when you bring top quality players into the training ground, it does sort of lift the spirits, and you want to prove to them you deserve to be playing alongside them. So, you know, training sessions would have gone up a level, and I know, and that's all great, but you've got to go and show it out on the pitch. And we've had moments throughout the season where we sort of dip back into the Everton ways, but we've got that different mentality where when we've gone a goal behind, me personally watching them, I haven't been worried. Last season I would have been terrified, thinking, well, that's the game gone now. You know, we've conceded and we can't see any mentality and how we're going to get into sort of plan B to get back into the game. But the guys have sort of just believed in what Carlo is obviously working with them on Finch Farm. You know, it's difficult not going to Goodison Park, you know, at this moment in time, but just from the TV, they're believing in what they're getting taught and they're sticking to that plan, and it's working. So when it does work, you know, the players believe in it even more, and we've had spells 20 minutes or so where we haven't had possession and we've kept together. We made it difficult for the opposition, and when we've had that sort of, as the game gets going on, you know, gap started appearing and Rodriguez comes into his own and finds these clever spaces, and you know, he's you know, his delivery, his timing of a passing of a ball, you know, it was great to see. And it shows that what we've been lacking for a long period of time is top quality footballers. And that is the difference. You know, he gets a lot of stick that he doesn't run, you know, but you don't have to run.
He
doesn't need to. It's a, you know, obviously, of course he does. And he's worked great in the last few games as being pretty good. You know, you're not expecting him to track back. You don't want him to be tracking back, but it is a team game at the end of the day. But he needs to, and Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin, I think, has learned a little bit off him, as you know, as Dominic, as his work rate was always been fantastic. Every time he has an opportunity, he'd be running the channels, he'd be chasing defenders. But at the end of the day, he's going to get rated on being in the right areas at the right time and be able to be composed, not sort of, you know, blowing out of his backside a little bit when the opportunity comes, and he's not settled in the right areas, and he sort of fluffs his lines, which probably has happened too many times during his Everton career. But I think with Carlo there working with him, he's not being lazy. He's picking his moments, and so when he does get an opportunity, he knows he's got delivery coming on from both sides of the pitch that he's got to get himself in the right areas to give him a chance to get on the score sheet. So it's been great to see. And as you said, it's the contrast from the end of last season of lockdown to now, the start of the season so far. It's been great because we're playing good football. We can see what we're doing. As fans, we can see what we're trying to do. The past previous years, it was sort of waiting for the mistake from the opposition and hoping they'll give us the game. And that was where I think a lot of Everton fans were quite frustrated.
Well, this is your last opportunity to subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month. You can read all of our great content on Everton and so much more. Just go to theathletic.com/EvertonPod to sign up before the offer ends on Sunday night. That's theathletic.com/EvertonPod and pay just £1 a month. You mentioned as well, like, the sort of the level that Rodriguez is at. I mean, straight away, there was a little bit of murmurs whether he could, you know, recreate the sort of elite levels he had when he started out at Real Madrid and scored 17 goals in his first season. And then, you know, he had a decent start at Bayern before it tailed off. I think we've put those to bed. But is it, I mean, you've played at some top clubs, like we said earlier, you know, with some elite players yourself. Is it almost an unconscious reaction when someone of a level that, without being disrespectful to the current players, because as you mentioned, Richarlison and Luka Dean, there's some fantastic footballers. When somebody who's technically even a level above comes in, what is it? Do you just find something within yourself unconsciously, or do you, how does that work?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, talk back to the Manchester City days where, you know, we're probably struggling and fighting for survival and doing okay-ish. But then as the money started rolling in, you know, Rubinho's come in, Tevez come in, mm-hmm. Alano's come in, and you just know that the level of training's got, you've got to be, me as a defender, I've got to be sharper and be wiser. So that adds my game to be better. But going forward, it makes, you know, the team go for runs that they probably wouldn't have done because they've got the ability to go and find you. Right. Rodriguez is coming in on his left side. So you're probably making runs that you wouldn't have done last year, and you're overstretching the opposition. And when you're going to get, you know, it's not like he's checking back and I'm not giving that pass. He's trying to do that pass every time. So that makes you, as a striker or as a midfield front runner, to make them runs, knowing that he's going to try and find you. And umptimus to try and win the game and score a goal. I think when you've got sort of less technical players, you probably make the easier option and pass it by 5 yards, 10 yards, and be a bit slow and stuff, and which we, you know, Evan's probably been guilty of many times, but he didn't want to make that mistake, make that sort of world-class ball and take the risk. We'd rather keep it simple, which is frustrating. Now we've got them type of players there. Now that's what I think from your teammates around you, that, you know, they make them different types of runs and the trust in your teammates. I think that's what we can see from the outside with Carlo this season. I think our teammates are trusting each other with the ball a little bit more. And, you know, it's great to see.
That's really interesting, because I think that frustration at the easy, safe, but ultimately negative pass, yeah, it frustrates supporters, but I think at times it frustrated and sort of killed the spirit of the actual players themselves when too many players were doing that. And you're absolutely spot on when you've got someone who just, if he's gone backwards, it's only to get it back quickly and turn it and put in a crossfield 30-yard ball. And when you see someone doing that, I think what you nailed there is you do see players beginning to think, well, I'm going to make this run. And it's not an overnight thing. There's a couple of times, I looked at a few of the goals we've conceded this season, and there's a couple of times that players just haven't really anticipated just where the ball is going to come from him, because they've expected it backwards into feet, and he's actually played it, you know, a few yards in front of them to run onto, to be progressive, and they're just not. It'll take a while for them all to adapt, but it makes such a difference.
It's clever play, and it's a difference between like a very good player and a world class player, where he puts a ball in the area that it makes your decision. If he's passing to me as a fullback or a winger, that I know all I've got to do is touch it and cross it in. It's not sort of be in front of the opposition lines, but I've still got to try and beat my man and try and find a cut through pass myself. You know, Rodrigo, I think many times he's cut in and he's played the ball wide, that it's give the fullback or it's give the Charleston, the only one option is to get it back in the box. So it's that's the difference, and it does, as we seen so far, that's the difference between an average side and a good side.
Absolutely. So it's kind of, it was all going so well, and we might have known until the derby. Not that it was a complete disaster of the type we've been expecting in recent Merseyside derbies, but it certainly did produce the usual volume of talking points. And again, reading your column and getting your thoughts that way on what happened with Jordan Pickford, but it's still rumbling on. Now that the dust has settled, there's a few weeks gap. What do you make of all that, the fallout from Pickford and from Richarlison in general, and what's got said afterwards?
We know his Blues. He was lucky to stay on the pitch, and we know derby games. You know, both sides. These type of tackles do happen. You know, even nowadays. You know, it's happened. You know, the last few years, they're not trying to go out and injure people, but they're trying to sort of show people that they're up for the fight. And, he's gone in very rash, and we got away with it. But I thought the way the media and the way it was portrayed after the game, Everton Liverpool's a massive game. It's been worldwide, so it is going to get massive attention. But what's going on now with death threats and stuff, it's something you don't want to see. It's not just Everton Liverpool. It happens with sort of Celtic, Rangers, Man City, Man United, when incidents like this happen. And it's sort of a society thing that, football's football. Players will get injured. Players never want to injure each other, but they want to make it tough for each other. Jordan's just lost his bearings. He probably could have come for the ball earlier. He delayed it, and he just threw his body in the way. Incidents like this happen. Van Dijk didn't stretch for it. He wouldn't have got touched, but if he thought he can get the ball, and both of them sort of went for the ball, well, Jordan has gone to block the ball, and he's clattered him. And it's, you don't want to see that on, no matter who your opposition is. But it's just the way it sort of dragged on day after day. They were still talking about it, and there was other incidents at the weekend after that. Sort of people went, oh, it's okay, because it's a different part of the pitch. That incident didn't happen. We have Everton fans have had it with Gomez and Son, that when it happened to Andre Gomez, we were all worried about him because he was our star player at the time and running the show. We lost him for a long period of time. So, I think Blues, we haven't really had these decisions our way. And when it has gone our way, we haven't really had the media attention. Lucas Dean against Southampton, I thought it was, again, a harsh red card. But as Blues, I accepted it in my column, thinking, well, that's it, we've got to get on with it. I wasn't expecting it to rescind the red card and give him just a one-match ban. That's a
no, nor first. Was I.
It's a first, and we're just sort of used to that.
Yeah.
It's hopefully just all died down. And for Jordan, he's had a difficult, up and down time so far this season. I thought his performance at Tottenham, the first game of the season, was outstanding. He was, I want my goalkeepers to be pretty quiet, and then when they get called upon to keep your team in the game, he made two fantastic saves in important times, and we went on to win the game, and that's his job. That's why we brought him to the football club. We don't want to be talking about incidents, like the derby or these incidents. But his kicking sometimes is absolutely fantastic, but then next minute it's woeful and they set up a chances, and his errors, basically we're talking about his errors, his decision making, and we don't want that. We just want him to be quiet, settled, and that's up down to the club now to protect him, us as Everton fans to back him. I go, look, he's our guy, he's our number one, let's give him the support he needs and get him back to, he's England's number one for a reason, You know, he's not a bad goalie. I think he's just trying to probably make up for the mistakes he's done by trying to get involved in a game more than what he should do. He's a goalkeeper. You know, he's not a centre-half. He doesn't need to do the wonder kicks. You know, leave that. Trust your teammates to do that. And there will be opportunities in the game when the game gets stretched. All he can do is, you know, his 40, 50-yard pings further forward when the game's stretched. But, you know, that's picking your moments, and that's up to the goalkeeper coach, Carlo Ancelotti, and that to explain to Jordan, to trust your teammates to play the game and play the football, and, you know, hopefully you keep us in it.
One of the very many reasons why it's such a shame that we haven't got crowds at the moment is, at Goodison, I feel like the siege mentality and the support would have really sort of coalesced into a massive backing for him. So, you know, the next home game after Newcastle, I think he would have run out to, you know, when his name gets read out at the start of the game, massive round of applause and real support for him, which I get the impression Jordan, you know, he ostensibly is quite a confident, so almost comes across brash, but there might be, I'm not trying to be armchair psychologist, but there might be a little bit of insecurity there too. So, to have that support important. Now, without that support, maybe, I hope he doesn't go on social media, but if he does, you'll probably just see a lot of criticism, and you forget that the average match going blue will get behind the players 1 to 11, no matter what, and especially in these circumstances. So it's just a shame. It is a shame. And as like you say, with, you know, the death threats is appalling, really.
I think Jordan is very strong-minded, and he's probably, he looks like, as you said, from the outside, he's got like a persona that he's confident, but I think every footballer likes to know that they're getting backed. And when you're getting backed from your own fans, you don't have to worry about, you know, pulling off these wonder saves for them. That we've got your back. Carlo Ancelotti's picked you as the number one, so we're backing Carlo, so we're backing yourself. We're all in this together, so, you know, he doesn't need any more pat on the back from the Everton fans. The team, the fans, we should let him know that we're behind him 100%. While he's wearing that blue shirt, we've got to get behind every player, not just Jordan, and give him the confidence to go out and do a job for us.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And let's talk about Southampton, because Carlo had said, hadn't he, that if look, the bubble's going to burst, we're going to lose a game, we're not going to go unbeaten all season, and it's how we react. Before we talk about that, the reaction that we hope we get on Sunday, what did you make of that? The goals were really avoidable. Certainly the first one, to see someone switch off from a throw-in like that was frustrating. And then the lack of a sort of proper right-back, and that's no slight on Ben Godfrey, cost us. But what was your take on the game?
It was a game that I was thinking, well, here's our first challenge so far this season, that, you know, a few key players might be out, and it's up to the, you know, it's an opportunity for our sort of squad players to come in and show everybody that they're willing to have a fight for the shirt. And obviously, I was concerned, but even the games before that, we were showing a lot of space. You know, Carlo's found this way of defending, which sort of goes against the grain of the way I've been brought up English. It's very, very deep, even on set pieces, very, very deep. And that's to protect the sort of Jordan, but also to make it difficult for the opposition. And we defended really well at times, but it's difficult for the midfield. Like, even when we play Brighton found a sort of way of having more possession than us, because our midfield was so stretched. We had so much space between our back four and our front line that, you know, we were probably a man short in there at times. And I was thinking that's going to could be a bit of a worry. It was a bit of a worry in the first half in the derby. Liverpool, you know, Firmino comes in and he's great at finding them positions, but we still couldn't sort of stop it. Alan couldn't protect the back four because he was so sort of stretched and didn't know whether to go mark his man or stand him on the striker's toes. And I think Southampton sort of, they tactically got us a bit more. They found sort of a bit of a weakness in how we've sort of set up. And also without a few key players, our style of play left. I understood Bernard playing because he's more experienced. He's a very good a very quality footballer who can, you know, break down defences. But I thought the way we've been playing with Richarlison, he, you know, he's very direct, gets the ball and likes to run forward. I thought it would have been more of a like-to-like if he put Anthony Gordon in there from the start, that away from home, if you get the chance to sort of counter-attack, he's got the pace to,
yeah,
you know, to run down the line. Instead of Bernard comes inside quite a lot and likes to link up play, I thought Anthony Gordon would have been more of a like-to-like and would have helped us more continuous of how we've been playing from the start of the season. And we mentioned Ben Godfrey, you know, it's he's obviously a fantastic footballer and a great defender, but when you play people out of position, you're sort of asking for trouble. And Southampton knew that, you know, they knew after the derby, he thought he'd done pretty well against Man City, Liverpool. You're the centre half playing right back, it's difficult against one of the best players in the world, and he did okay at times, but you can tell he was, you know, reluctant to go wide and be more one-on-one. He was trying to be more of a centre half or a back three, and I think Southampton sort of knew that. Look, we're going to ask Everton a few questions here, and they did. And they came out of the game and said that's probably the best they've played, and which is great and well done to them. But what was really frustrating from our side, we let them. You know, we went back to our old ways of sort of who's going to step up to the plate a little bit. We were talking before about Rodriguez coming in and creating opportunities and people making runs that they weren't doing.
Yeah.
We went back to our ways of possession football a little bit, where when we did have possession, it wasn't quick enough. It wasn't like, come on, let's get back into the game and press forward. Every time we passed the ball four or five times, we still haven't gotten past their midfield. So in Southampton just set back up again with two backs of four and protected themselves. They protected their back four. You know, Calvert-Lewin never really got a touch of the ball because they wouldn't let us put a ball through them to find his feet. But we were the opposite. We were sort of marking man-to-man, and they could sort of two or three passes. They were in our final third, and that was really frustrating. I think, you know, a few players who came in, you know, they didn't step up to the plate. And that's frustrating because as a substitute, I've been there myself, where, you know, a manager brings a player in, you're frustrated, but you've got to go, right, okay, when my opportunity comes, I'm going to show you, you know, I'm willing to start. And, you know, I don't want to be knocking on your door going, how come I'm not starting? You've got to wait for your opportunity, and the opportunity happened for a couple of players there, and you're just thinking, you know, they weren't on the same wavelength. And it's frustrating because then Richarlison, Iwobi, say I'm talking about Iwobi starting and he come off at half-time. Iwobi isn't Richarlison, you know, but let's find his strength. What's Iwobi's strengths? And you feel that he gets bogged down in trying to keep the ball like a street footballer, like one-twos, and like Bernard, similar type of player, and play cute, clever football. And that's great at times. And sometimes it's great when the game's stretched, when you find these spaces. But to start doing it early on, when, you know, Southampton were full of energy, they were closing us down, they were harassing us a lot quicker than what we were. We were sort of standoffish and not sort of protecting anybody and letting Southampton basically do what they wanted to do. And that was the most frustrating side of it. And, you know, both goals, you could easily just... every goal is a defensive error or someone switching off. But what's happened in previous games that someone else has bailed us out. Like Michael Keane, I think, has been fantastic since lockdown. He's been, you know, when we've switched off, he's been alert to certain situations. And it just wasn't to be against Southampton. It was sort of, hopefully, fingers crossed, it was just one of them days and it's a bit of a wake-up call. But I was hoping we had that mentality, the change of mentality I was telling earlier on, where we went behind and can we get back into the game. I still thought we could have, because I thought we were still in like gear two. We haven't even woke up yet against Southampton. And it's quite surprising that, you know, we always moan about the so many games and we haven't had the best pre-season. But going into the Southampton game, my worry was we had a week to, you know, to prepare for this game. And our best games have been when it's been back-to-back. When we've been playing Saturday, Wednesday, or Saturday, Tuesday, with the League Cup games, that we've had a bit of a match rhythm. And I was sort of welcoming this break because I thought it's going to give the lads who's played many games, I think Michael Keane's probably played every minute, a chance to recharge his batteries. And then when they're going, when the, you know, the whistle goes, we've got that extra buzz and extra energy. But it felt like we were still lethargic. It felt like we've had that sort of day off, which it can happen. It doesn't normally happen this early on in the season. But I felt that's how it looked from, you know, watching on the TV, is that we were a little bit lethargic. We were used to having that sort of lazy day a little bit. And because we've had a great start, that we were thinking, well, we'll get back into it soon. It's only Southampton. And that's the the mentality that we want to get rid of. I think Everton have been guilty about that in the past, where we've, us as fans, have loved these big games against the bigger clubs in the country, Goodison, and we've we've battered City or United, but then we go and throw it away against the lesser teams like 3 days later. So it doesn't mean anything.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
There is, for like the likes of Alan, it is going to be a first taste of not having a winter break. And it, as you said, he's been so important to us. I hope his level doesn't drop off. Rodriguez, likewise, I guess. We've just got to hope that Carlo can sort of mitigate for that. Because I think if you take Rodriguez and Alan out of the team, or they take their form away, then, like you say, there are some worrying question marks. But on the bright side, Richarlison knows what it's all about. Decore does. He's got the experience of the Premier League. So let's hope that they can help the other two to keep their levels where we need them. On Sunday, Newcastle were recording this Friday. Luca Dean, as you mentioned, did get his ban reduced, which was a pleasant surprise. But it looks as if almost certainly Niels Nkunku is going to start at left back. If anyone can talk about the sort of... the pressure or the opportunity of being a young left back and being thrust into limelight, mate, it's you. What do you make of this opportunity for him and for his general start to life at Everton?
Well, if he's got the same mentality as myself, I would be very, very disappointed I haven't been involved so far this season after his performances. But look, he's a young guy, and what I've seen of him, yeah, it's the League Cup games, but he can. He's being brought up in a great development education. You can see that straight away. His decision making is spot on. He's got technique. He's got ability to whip balls in and do overlaps. He's doing what a good youth under 23 footballer does. And what normally happens when you get into the series, that sort of gets kicked out of you a little bit because it stops your game. But he's still doing it. And it's surprising teams. Okay, it was only Fleetwood or lesser teams, but you still got to do it. He's doing the right things. He was standing in the right areas, body positions right, picking the right passes, bombing forward when he could, and when he got an opportunity to whip it in, there was fantastic deliveries there for anyone to get on the end of. And that it was great to see. It was disappointed. Lucas Dean's been fantastic since he'd come to the club, and that was always our concern with Leighton leaving, and we were wondering who we've been used to such a good quality left back for many years, and that was a concern for many Blues. But we've got two there now. Defending wise, he hasn't been tested. We haven't really seen him his defensive qualities, but he's built right. He's very strong, very powerful. So let's hope his decision making defending wise, his standard position defending wise, is just as good as it is when he's going forward. So I've got no concerns at all with if Carlo throws him in. He looks like he's got the ability to do so, and we don't see him every day at Finch Farm, so you've got to trust Carlo will probably put him in if he's doing the right things in training each and every day. But he showed just great qualities from what he's been taught at Marseille, and he's kept that belief and that truth in himself, and he's trusted himself instead of his teammates. If that sort of doesn't really make sense. It's like when you're a young kid coming through and a senior pro asks you for the ball, sometimes some young kids will just give them it because it's, Sigerson or it's Gomez. Yeah. Because they've asked for it, you feel like, oh, that's what I've got to do. He wasn't doing that. He was picking the pass that was right for him. And that's what sort of stood out a little bit. It was like, okay, we can play the ball and pass it around when needed to, but to make his game to that different level that we showed when he's playing against Fleetwood, was he was picking the right passes for him and not just who was showing for the ball. So he trusted his decision making more than his teammates, which was, you know, which is good to see from a young kid.
It's really good to see. It's interesting that as well, about, you know, sort of trusting himself as opposed to just deferring to the older, more experienced players. I'm reassured by his performance against West Ham. I know they made a few changes for that cup game, but you know, the sort of cynic in me would worry that we'd seen him be absolutely fantastic, but it was against Salford and Fleetwood. But to see him, he didn't get as forward as much against West Ham, but he still did well. So I'm really enthused to see him on Sunday, and just hope that it doesn't present us an issue because we've got neither first choice left back. Neither first choice fullback. I mean, on the right, I thought we really missed Seamus on Sunday at St Mary's. And do you think it's time to, if he's fit, give John Joe a run out as a bespoke right back, or would you persist with Ben Godfrey?
I think Carlo would have gone with John Joe if he was fit. As I said earlier on, I think the way we've been playing, with Seamus being, you know, on great form again, his levels improved again this season, but the way Seamus plays the game, he likes driving forward, he likes making, you know, straight runs up the line. And, you know, then we've come to Ben Godfrey, a centre-half who doesn't really know the position well. And we've got the other side with Bernard Richarlison. It's sort of, we were all out of sync against Southampton. So that's why I'm really thinking that hopefully that was just a day off and we can bounce back. So I really would like to see. I think Carlo would, to be honest, rather prefer to put John Joe there. But John's just a similar style of, he's a fullback, you know, and he knows when to go forward and he knows when to defend. So I think for the balance of the team, I think it'd be right to throw John Joe back if he's fully fit. But, you know, I'm not too sure what he is fitness-wise.
Yeah, quite. I mean, at the same time, you know, if he's going to be carrying something, it's possibly not worth going down that road, is it?
Yeah, I would like to see Ben Godfrey play. I've only seen a couple of games of him. I didn't know too much about him. But speaking to people, he's very, very highly rated. Going through the England ranks, you know, he's being coached again very, very well. So it'd be... whether there's time for, you know, we've had Mina, who's he's did okay at times, but sometimes he looks a bit sort of making the wrong decisions at other times. He picks up a lot of injuries, Mina, so it might be an opportunity for Carlo to rest him a little bit and give Godfrey and Keane a chance to blend themselves together, and probably having them to, you know, hopefully make the back four a little bit stronger, as you said, without our, you know, our first choice fullback.
Before we wrap up, mate, just thinking ahead of January, I know Carlo Ancelotti said that after the game on Sunday, he was asked about the window in January. He shut it down quite quickly. He said, I don't want to speak about the transfer window, which you can understand. You're obviously working in football as well as a consultant at CCR Sports at the moment. Do you... you know, so you, again, you'll know the amount of preparation that goes on behind the scenes before, you hope goes on behind the scenes before any window at every club. Do you anticipate us maybe looking at the options out there, potentially a forward? You know, we read that he wanted, and we understood that he wanted a more experienced striker to play back up to Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison, or to compete with them. It didn't quite happen by the end of the summer window. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it did surprise me. I thought Everton did well in the transfer window, doing what they could as early as possible. But when Moise Keane left to go to PSG, I thought, well, they will have a backup. And the difficult thing is for recruitment and at every club is to show a player that you want him, but not overspending and overpromising. Dominic Calvert-Lewin's probably started the season so well that it might have put off other players thinking, well, I'm not going to get ahead of him, but I want to play. Everton probably won't be able to say, well, I can guarantee you, you know, 90 minutes. And trying to, you know, bring in an experienced player who's done it all will cost money, but then he's going to be sitting on the bench. So the balancing act of doing that is difficult. And if Carlo, you know, but the club has got to back Carlo. He'll know when it's time to rest Dominic. He'll know, you know, we can put Richarlison up there. You know, we can change it a little bit at the time being. It's only, I think it was 88 days, I think, since the window closed till it reopens again.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's not that long. And I feel the club will do business if we're in the right area in the league. Previous years, we've been frustrated as fans that we haven't brought anybody in. But I think the club have took it as a financial situation where there was no chance of us reaching Europe, or there was no chances to sort of be involved in a cup competition, because we were out of probably both cups by the January window. And they're thinking it's, yeah, you know, it's bringing somebody in that inflated transfer window time is probably a wrong decision for the club, and to sort of save the pennies for the summer and get them in early. And we have done it this season. We've got them in early. The pre-season was strange for everybody, but the ball got them in, and we've seen the benefits. So many times, it was a couple of years ago or last season when we got Mina in, and the year before we got Gomez. They arrived at the last day. They weren't. Yeah. They haven't had much pre-season. They took a lot of time to, get to speed with everybody. And by the time they got going, our season was gone. We were so disappointing. The only light at the end of the tunnel was to see these new players, but there was nothing to fight for. So I feel the club in January, if we're in the right areas in the league, if we're pushing for Europe, if we're still in the round in the cup competitions, I feel that there will be a striker coming in. And maybe other positions as well. Maybe a fullback and elsewhere. So yeah, I think the club will do business if we're in the right areas.
Well, that's certainly something I think most fans like to see, to build, continue to build from a position of strength, hopefully. Mike, thanks so much for coming on. Really enjoyed chatting with you. Been fascinating. You can follow Mike on Twitter at Borley03 and read his column in Liverpool Echo. So, mate, thank you so much for coming on. Appreciate it. And let's hope that we're all celebrating come Sunday tea time.